my song. Let's sing it. It's gonna be freaking awesome. Come on, it's gonna be freaking awesome. You know the words. It's gonna be freaking awesome. That's it, see. It's gonna be freaking awesome.
Jesse Blaze Snyder here, the coolest geek alive. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm back at my pop studio in Redondo Beach. It's dark out, the moon is up and full, and I am feeling a little apprehensive. Last week, I wrote a whole speech so that I didn't have to make things up to say for the entirety of my show and that I was prepared to say everything that I wanted to say. And this week, I'm just kind of winging it. I'm a little nervous about it. So please bear with me as we talk about the state of the DC cinematic universe. Now, starting back in 2013, they kicked off the original plan for the DC Cinematic Universe, which came to be known as the Snyderverse. And I thought maybe we would just walk through real quick what that was. It started with Man of Steel and Henry Cavill, who I think we can all agree Henry Cavill is an amazing Superman, but the actual subject matter of Man of Steel left a lot to be desired for hardcore fans of Superman like myself. I know there's a lot of people out there who really enjoyed that movie and who love to defend it until they're blue in the face. I would argue that the people who are defending Man of Steel have never liked Superman to begin with and have never actually read a great Superman comic book. I believe that anybody who has spent any time really enjoying Superman at his best would agree that Man of Steel is not Superman at his best. Man of Steel is a great movie. It's very beautiful. Henry Cavill does a great job. And Zack Snyder and David S. Goyer, who wrote the screenplay, everybody did a great job on the basics of what this thing is. I think even Christopher Nolan was involved in the creation process there. And look, what they did bringing this real-world grounded Superman into reality, it's commendable. They did a good job at what they were trying to do. That's what they were trying to do. But for me, they fundamentally screwed the pooch right from the beginning by trying to make Superman into Batman. Trying to make Superman into a brooding, I don't know what to do, I'm not always going to do the right thing, sometimes you have no choice and you must kill, sort of character. Which, in the comics, Batman doesn't kill either. And I really am not a fan of this willy-nilly Batman letting people fall down elevator shafts in the other Batman movies, you know, that Tim Burton produced. You know, I like a Batman and a Superman who don't kill. Batman in the comics is willing to threaten. He's willing to make you think he might kill you or make you think he might torture you. He's willing to go to dark places. Superman in the comics never goes to those dark places. Granted, there's lots of people who say, oh, there's exceptions. You know, Superman once killed, was he? Yes. You know, they've done storylines where Superman killed somebody or whatever else. But that stuff does not usually stand the test of time. We're always brought back to a relative sweet and kind and gentle Superman who's demonstrating that there's always a better way. And that's why I really love Superman. As a person, I like to think there's always a better way. There's always a better way forward. There's a better way to do this. And if we just use our super minds, we can come up with something. So Man of Steel kind of got them off on a poor footing with the audience very split about how they felt about it. Some people enjoyed that Man of Steel movie. Other people didn't. Following up Man of Steel was Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice, which just seemed a bit rushed, right? You know, in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, we had The Incredible Hulk, which wasn't so great. Iron Man, which is amazing, Captain America, which is pretty damn good, and Thor, which I really like the first Thor movie. I like the second one okay as well. I know some people crap talk that one, but 1, 2, 3, 4 of these great tentpole characters from the Marvel Universe are introduced, and then we get our Avengers. But not so here. We get Man of Steel, then all of a sudden the Superman sequel is a Batman vehicle, which also introduces Wonder Woman, and the beginnings of pieces of the Justice League, which was just too much too soon for me. We didn't get the opportunity to really spend as much time with Batman as I might have liked to. It's probably the best version of Batman that we've ever seen in film, like the closest to the comic book version of Batman. But because of all the other things that were going on in the movie, we don't get to spend a lot of time with him. So it was a little bit of a letdown, Batman versus Superman, and it set us up for this Justice League movie just like a year and change later that was definitely not ready for prime time. So one of the more interesting choices in the beginning of this original DC film's rollout was Suicide Squad, which I'm a huge fan of the Suicide Squad. But the whole premise of Suicide Squad is that villains of some of these prominent heroes get a second chance, a new lease on life from Amanda Waller to put their lives on the line and earn their way out of prison. This premise worked really great in the comics because the book was filled with villains that we knew from existing superhero books. So to make a Suicide Squad film before you've really had a chance to establish your DC universe, before you've been able to make a Wonder Woman movie or make an Aquaman movie or make a Green Lantern movie or a Flash movie and introduce some of the bad guys that might be featured in the Suicide Squad, it was odd. It was odd to say the least. It seemed like a weird kind of cash grab, a weird quick fix to get like a whole bunch of characters out into the universe. But at the same time, by doing that, they robbed them of their agency. Like, why does it matter that Deadshot's in here? We've never seen him fight Batman before. Why does it matter that Harley Quinn's here? We haven't really been able to establish that she's the Joker's girlfriend and that the Joker's a thing. We haven't met the Joker. So it was really weird for Suicide Squad to come along. And I mean, I think its failure was mainly due to that. And the fact that it was just a very weird movie to put out at the very beginning of your DC cinematic universe. I think that if they had waited to release that film until people were demanding it, because there were all these great villains that had been introduced in all these individual superhero projects, that would have been a lot more successful for them. And, you know, in the comic books, there's this great thing, the periodicals gives you the ability to test the waters with characters, with ideas, and see how your audience is feeling about them. DC just assumed that everybody was going to be interested in everything that they did. They didn't give themselves a chance to create characters, and I mean create the characters by finding the right actor to mix with the character on the comic book page and put them in the right stories that people wanted to see told, and then have the audience go, man, I love that character. You did a great job adapting them. Let me see more of that. You know, that's when you go, all right, now we greenlit a Margot Robbie Harley Quinn movie. Woohoo! Because the audience is demanding it. They didn't give you a chance to get the audience demanding anything. And Suicide Squad is really the type of comic book premise that it pays to have an audience demanding to see more of this villain and that villain and this villain. And then, hey, let's give them a book. Let's put them in the Suicide Squad. Hey, let's give them a movie. Those villains were really good. People still want to see those characters. So Suicide Squad was a bit of a weird one. Then we got Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman was great. The ending was a little bit weak, but Wonder Woman was great. And now that we've got Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman, and the Suicide Squad for some reason, we got the Justice League. And it's just such a bummer. You know, if they'd taken the time to introduce The Flash, to introduce Green Lantern, to introduce Aquaman, and then giving us Justice League, it would have meant so much more. It just would have meant more. It would have been earned and exciting, and I really think people would have showed up to the theaters and they would have made lots of money. But they rushed out Justice League to try to compete with the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and, you know, it bombed. So after Justice League, we got Aquaman, which generally is great. I can't say that Jason Momoa is really the Aquaman that I grew up with. He's not exactly scratching that itch for me. But I like Jason Momoa, and he does, I think, a good job playing Jason Momoa in the movie. But I did enjoy that one. And this was the beginning of sort of the DC Cinematic Universe picking up some steam for me. Because following up Aquaman was Shazam. And I loved Shazam. I watched that all the time with my kids. Zachary Levi is amazing. Really just funny and down to earth and cool. And what a great movie that turned out to be. I'm really hopeful that the follow-up, the sequel to Shazam, is going to be just as good. After Shazam, though, things started to go wrong again. We got Birds of Prey, which was basically the backdoor Harley Quinn movie. And I'm a huge, huge Birds of Prey fan. I love Birds of Prey. But don't call a movie Birds of Prey unless you're going to make a Birds of Prey movie. Those characters didn't look anything like the characters that I grew up reading. I wanted to see a movie called Birds of Prey starring characters that look like the characters from Birds of Prey. And I think a lot of people felt the same way that I felt about it. And it wasn't a Birds of Prey movie. The Birds of Prey were just kind of shoehorned into the Harley Quinn show. And, you know, I think Margot Robbie does a great job as Harley Quinn. But, you know, you got to do these things correctly. You got to adapt a storyline that's meaningful to people. You have to set up the characters. I mean, to not introduce the Joker first and then introduce Harley Quinn. And then introduce them breaking up, and then introduce her being off on her own. And like, these are all individual movies. You rushed it all to get it out quicker, and it just diminishing returns. We then had Wonder Woman 1984, which was very disappointing. Zack Snyder's Justice League Director's Cut, which was cool, but really long. Like, really, really long. Then we had The Suicide Squad, which Peacemaker coming out of that was a bright spot, even though Peacemaker and Vigilante, not exactly what I grew up reading in the comics, but they did do something great with it. The Suicide Squad itself is really enjoyable as a film. There are some nice nods to the comics in there, but it's not like The Suicide Squad was recreating something fabulous from my days of reading DC Comics. It was a pure fabrication from the mind of James Gunn. It's a great one. It's really enjoyable. I liked seeing a lot of the elements that are in the movie, but he didn't turn anything that I loved and I was demanding to be turned into a film into a film. He made up his own film using whatever characters he wanted to use. And that's cool, but it is not the same as adapting comic books into films. He adapted the name The Suicide Squad and the name of some of the characters he took and made characters that fit what he wanted and turned it into a movie. And it's a good movie. I do like it. But it's not exactly what I was asking for. Finally, they released Black Adam, who is best known as a bad guy for Shazam. Releasing a Black Adam movie with no relationship to Shazam whatsoever is a bit of an odd choice. Granted, his renaissance in the comics came about when he was reintroduced as an anti-hero in the pages of JSA. I was a huge fan of that book, and I really enjoyed the arcs with Black Adam in them, and I enjoyed storylines with Black Adam that went on after that. There was a great miniseries written by Peter J. Tomasi, I think it was just called Black Adam, that was awesome. And I would love to sort of see any of those things play out. But I think not having established a truly good Superman was probably the biggest problem with Black Adam. Because in order to be an anti-Superman, you have to establish what Superman is. And the Man of Steel movie did not establish what Superman represents. What Superman represents to the whole of the DC universe is the pure good. So by making a Superman who is not pure good, it kind of muddies all of the moral waters that every DC comic book has ever been published on. Because Superman has been a pillar of their publishing slate since day one. So every book that DC has ever published has been published alongside Superman. This is how important Superman and Batman are to the DC cinematic universe. And if you don't get those two characters exactly right, in balance with one another, you're shooting yourself in the foot and you're making it difficult to create an interesting tapestry for the DC universe to be playing with. Because it's all about how the different characters interact with one another, right? If we're going to cross all these characters over, they have to be different enough that when they come together in the Justice League, you're like, oh, wow, this is so great. I love seeing these characters interact with one another. It's so great to see Captain America interact with Iron Man because they're so different. And it's so great to see the Hulk in there and Thor in there because they're so different. So Black Adam was sold to comic book readers because he was so different than Superman. And that's why we liked him. But really, the Man of Steel Superman and Black Adam are kind of similar characters. So when Superman shows up at the end of Black Adam, you're like, so what? Like, you're going to break his neck like you did Zod? Superman's that much more imposing against Black Adam. And it's not even scary to see the two of them go up against each other because you know Superman's going to do whatever he has to do to stop Black Adam, and Black Adam will do the same. It's not two different characters' morality banging up against each other, which is the best part about comics. Seeing Spider-Man interact with the Punisher and going, oh man, they don't think the same. Punisher's going to kill everybody, but Spider-Man's not going to want that. Uh-oh, this is going to be conflict. That's what we're looking for. We're looking for interesting, moralistic conflict featuring characters that we generally think of as virtuous. So anyway, the DC Cinematic Universe of old did Black Adam no favors by creating a Man of Steel who was a little bit morally ambiguous and not a Man of Steel who was a beacon of pure light, which is really what I believe the DC Universe needs to establish in order to make the rest of their intellectual property work for them. Anyway, this past week, James Gunn came out and he announced what he's calling Chapter 1, Gods and Monsters, the new slate of the DC Cinematic Universe. James Gunn, if you didn't hear, was recently made the co-CEO along with Peter Safran of DC Studios. And everybody's been waiting with bated breath to find out what they're going to do, what they're going to make, how they're going to change the cinematic universe. And thank you to Sci-Fi Radio right here. I've got a transcript of the video that James Gunn put out just this past week announcing their slate of films and television shows. So I'm going to read to you what he said, and I'm going to interject along the way as we talk about this stuff. So, quote, "Hey everybody, I'm James Gunn. I'm the co-CEO of DC Studios. So, as many of you know, DC has been disconnected in film and television for a long time. Our jobs, mine and Peter's, is to come in and make sure that DCU is connected in film, television, gaming, and animation, that the characters are consistent, played by the same actors, and that it works in one story. And if something is outside of that, like Matt Reeves' Batman or Todd Phillips' Joker or Teen Titans Go, that it is clearly labeled as DC Elseworlds outside of the mainstream DCU continuity." All right, pause. Oh, this is such a great idea. It seems a little too late. DC famously had a wonderful logo, emblem, whatever, that they would put out certain books under called Elseworlds, where they would tell a story from the multiverse. And it would be this Elseworlds. It was an Elseworlds Batman story where Batman was a vampire. Very cool. Lots of really cool stories that came out as Elseworlds. And he's going out of his way to say that some of these things are the Elseworlds and that others are going to be part of the mainstream DCU continuity. That's a really cool thing to do and establish, but I think that at this point, they're really going to be confusing people because of the slate of films that has already come and gone and how many times that they've stopped and started and restarted this whole thing. In the comic books, the Elseworlds concept works because the non-Elseworld has been firmly established. We know who Superman is. We know who Batman is. We know who the Justice League is. So then when you say, oh, we're going to tell an Elseworld story, we're going to take those things that you know and we're going to flip them on their heads. Well, what do we really know about Superman and Batman and the Justice League and whatever based on the movies that they've put out? You can't really make an Elseworld until you create the non-Elseworld. And they have not created a world that lives and breathes for the DC Universe yet. Not yet. Hopefully they will soon. All right, continuing on. Quote, now Peter and I have gotten pretty lucky in terms of the four projects that are coming out over the next year. First, we have Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Shazam has always been a off kind of in his own part of the DCU, so he connects very well. That moves directly into The Flash, a fantastic movie that I really love that resets the entire DC Universe. So this is interesting. He's talking about the movies that he had nothing to do with. Shazam, Fury of the Gods. Again, I'm a huge fan of the first Shazam movie. I'm hoping this will be great. The Flash movie, which has been in production hell for a while. I don't know how to feel about that Flash movie. Apparently, it's going to reset the entire DC Universe. I guess that's good, but wouldn't it be more convenient if it was resetting the DC Universe before Blue Beetle and Aquaman 2 came out, which are the next two movies he's about to talk about? Quote, then to move into Blue Beetle, a fantastic film about a kid who's a marvelous part of the DCU. Marvelous, is that a pun? And then into Aquaman 2, which leads directly into our next few projects, which I'm going to tell you about now. All right, well, this is a tough spot that James Gunn and Peter Safran are in here. There's existing movies from the previous DC Cinematic Universe that they have to roll with because millions of dollars have already been spent, and here they are. So those movies are coming out. What will those movies have to do with the DC Cinematic Universe moving forward? I have no idea. Maybe we'll find out in a second. Quote, so Peter and I, along with a group of very talented writers, have started to map out an 8 to 10 year plan for what DC Studios will be in film, television, and gaming. This first chapter is called Gods and Monsters. Now this, what I'm about to tell you, is part of the first chapter. It's not the entire first chapter. The first project is Creature Commandos. Creature Commandos. Creature Commandos is an animated series. I've written all the episodes. Something we're going to do that's a little bit different in DC is we're going to have characters move into animation, out of animation, usually having the same actor play their voice as who plays them in live action. Well, this is pretty cool. I like the idea of the actors going into animation, animation being a part of the physical DC universe, but this is the first announcement of James Gunn's DC Cinematic Universe. His first announcement is an animated series of the Creature Commandos. I don't understand that. I don't understand that at all. I mean, I think that James Gunn is more than capable of making something awesome out of the Creature Commandos, but let's just say I'm not super excited about that first announcement. That doesn't set me on fire. I'm not like, yes, I will see the DC Cinematic Universe that I've always dreamed of up on the big screen. All right, moving on. The next project up is Waller. Waller, there. Not that I'm aware of, I don't think Waller's ever had her own series. So what the hell is this based on? Sorry. This is the story of Amanda Waller, played by Viola Davis. Viola Davis is great. Viola Davis is going to team up with the members of Team Peacemaker, and this is a story created by Crystal Henry, who did Watchmen, and Jeremy Carver, who created Doom Patrol. It is a fantastic story that is out of this world, and I can't wait for people to see it. All right, I love the Amanda Waller character, but again, this isn't based on any source material. Even if they just excised all the pieces that were about Waller and they put it into her own series, that doesn't count. I wasn't like, man, I wish you would excise Amanda Waller from all these comic books that I like and give her own series starring Viola Davis so that she can have her own star vehicle. I don't care about that. I love Amanda Waller because the part that she plays in the comic books that I have loved, like Suicide Squad, not because I want to see her in her own book on the in her own movie on the big screen. This is really like missing the point as far as I can tell. And again, now what? Creature Commandos followed by Waller. Waller. So relatively unknown and unimportant group of characters from the DC Universe. And now we're moving into an important character in the DC Universe who's never had their own book, who's now being given their own series. All right. I don't get that. This doesn't make any sense to me. All right, okay, next up is the big one. Quote, the true beginning of the DCU, this is called Superman Legacy. This is being written by me. I'm in the middle of it, and I'm having a great time doing it, and Superman will be released in the theaters July 11th, 2025. All right, I really like James Gunn. I think James Gunn's a great writer. I don't really think that his sensibilities are great for Superman. I do believe that any good writer is capable of writing something great if they're willing to do the research necessary to give the established audience of Superman fans what they've been looking for here. I think the Superman audience has been very clear about what they didn't like about Man of Steel and what they would like to see from a future Superman movie. I'm hoping that this will give it to us. But again, James Gunn writes Superman Legacy movie where we're going to go back in time and we're going to see a young Superman. I'm like, I'm friggin' done with it, man. I want Superman here and now, established in the world with a big-ass rogues gallery of Metallo and the Parasite and Brainiac and Lex Luthor and just anybody cool that we can get on the big screen, like Lobo and maybe a Doomsday that doesn't look like a cave troll. That would be nice. Mongol, Bizarro, Silver Banshee. Anybody cool who Superman will have to tussle with, who has a good look to them. I'm tired of seeing Superman fighting other human beings. I want to see Superman fight some monsters. So if he can give me Superman fighting monsters, I'll be a happy dude. But yeah, honestly, again, and this was already announced a little while ago, the Superman Legacy movie, I'm not really stoked. I don't want to see Superman year one. I want to see Superman year now. So I'm not excited, but moving on. Quote, okay, the next thing is a big premiere HBO television series called Lanterns. This is the story of a couple of Green Lanterns, John Stewart and Hal Jordan, and we have a few other Lanterns peppered in there, but this is really a terrestrial-based TV show, which is almost like True Detective, with a couple of Green Lanterns who are space cops watching over Precinct Earth. In it, they discover a terrifying mystery that ties into our larger story of the DCU. Well, I'm excited about this. To a certain degree, I think that it's a little bit of a waste to scale the Green Lantern Corps down so small to make it a little itty-bitty TV show. Again, before you've established the bigness of the Green Lantern Corps, and it's big and vast. And to go really small with it is very cool, and I think this could be very good. I don't know, again, what specific storyline this is based on. What exactly are they bringing to life from the comics that we've been clamoring for? Granted, I'd like to see John Stewart on the big screen. I'd like to see Hal Jordan. I think a police procedural with the Green Lantern Corps could be very cool. But this isn't exactly, again, scratching the itch that I desire to have scratched. All right, next up. Quote, next is a big movie called The Authority. The Authority? The Authority is a passion project of mine. It's based on the marvelous Wildstorm characters we are now bringing into the DCU and will interact with all of our primary DCU characters. The Authority are a group of superheroes who think the world is broken and they want to fix it by any means necessary, and it's a very different look at superheroes. Well, oh my God, do I have such mixed feelings about this. I love The Authority. I hope and pray that they can do something really cool with the movie, despite the idea that it's going to be a part of the DC universe. Now, The Authority is a great and famous comic book, but it was not a part of the DC cinematic universe when it came out and became famous and popular. In fact, it is a play on the Justice League. The Authority is a Justice League-like team who decides to take matters into their own hands and do what is necessary to save their Earth. This book was great, and they could make many movies based on The Authority and the books that came before it called Stormwatch. There's a Batman and Superman character in there named Apollo and the Midnighter, who are basically Batman and Superman if they were gay lovers. And the book is awesome. It's funny. It's fun. It's big. It was written by Warren Ellis. There was a little bit of work on it done by Mark Millar. It's really, really worth your time to go and pick up these graphic novels that have the big stories with these characters. However, in recent time, The Authority has been kind of shoehorned into the DC universe, and it doesn't make any sense because The Authority is the Justice League. They are Justice League, but harder. And if they existed in the DC universe, the Justice League would come down on them so fast and so hard, their heads would spin. And Midnighter and Apollo are literally kind of goof versions of Superman and Batman. So before you establish a Justice League of your own, before you establish the major pillars of the DC universe, you're going to introduce the Authority, who are basically going to undermine the authority of whatever Justice League you might introduce into your universe. I've got a lot of trepidation about this one. Meanwhile, if this was an Authority movie that was in Elseworlds like they were talking about earlier, and it was in its own universe, just allowed to do its own thing, oh my God, I would be breaking out the confetti and celebrating because, I would love to see The Authority turned into an awesome, badass movie with somebody like James Gunn producing, making sure that it got done right. Because that, if ever there was a comic that deserved to be turned into a great film, it's The Authority. Also, Planetary, another Wildstorm creation, which is a great one. But in the DC universe, The Authority is a big problem, I think. Anyway, I'll leave it at that because it's all speculation at this point. All right, next up, we're doing a television series called Paradise Lost. Paradise Lost is the story of Paradise Island, usually known as Themyscira, which is the birthplace of Wonder Woman. It's almost like Game of Thrones with Westeros, but with all the inhabitants of Paradise Island. Ugh. Okay, this is not a comic that I can say I have ever read. And not one that I've been clamoring for. There's no established storyline that just needs to be told. This is just something that they're doing to wank themselves off, I guess. Why do we want to watch a series about Paradise Island before Wonder Woman got there? What is it that's been established already that has made us so interested in Themyscira? Are you guys super interested in Themyscira? I'm not. I'd love, you know, a good Wonder Woman movie to make up for that shit stain that was Wonder Woman 1984. All right, next up. The introduction of the DCU's Batman is, quote, the Brave and the Bold. The Brave and the Bold is the story of Batman and his actual son, Damian Wayne. This is based on Grant Morrison's great comic book run. Damian Wayne is my favorite Robin. He's a little assassin that Batman tries to get in line. So this is the story of the two of them and the beginning of the Batman family story in the DCU. Oh my God, I have so much to say about this. Yes, Grant Morrison, great comic book run. It's amazing. Calling this Batman movie The Brave and the Bold, you've got the Batman and a sequel to the Batman. And now you're going to have another Batman in existence, but the movie that he's coming out in is called The Brave and the Bold, which I don't think is a winning strategy for you guys promoting this movie. And Damian Wayne, Damian is a great Robin. I don't know if he's my favorite Robin, but having a favorite Robin comes from establishing Robin. We've got what? The guy from Batman and Robin, Chris O'Donnell? And what other Robin have we had? Have we met any Robins? Does the audience know who Robin is? There is this amazing story of Dick Grayson growing up and wanting to leave the shadow of the Bat, of Batman taking in a new ward, Jason Todd, who's a bit of a heel, and ultimately the audience turns on him and they voted in the comics to kill him off. They killed him off. They eventually brought him back as a dark, brooding Robin who basically Batman let get killed. Then Tim Drake comes along. He's a detective. He figures out that Bruce Wayne is Batman and that Batman needs a Robin. He's a great Robin. And then eventually Damian Wayne is introduced down the line. And there's some great stories. Batman Son of the Demon, which is one of my favorite graphic novels, Batman graphic novel, which was basically about Batman falling in love with Talia al Ghul, who's Ra's al Ghul's daughter, and them hooking up and her getting pregnant with his baby. And then this was non-canon for a long time. For years and years and years and years, there was no Bat baby out in the wilderness. And then one day, Grant Morrison dusted off that old idea, and he introduced Damian Wayne, who is a lot of people's favorite Robins. He is a great Robin. But without establishing all of the other Robins that I just said, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean anything if you just skip ahead to Damian Wayne Robin. You're skipping so many brilliant Batman stories, so many things that would be great to see as films. I don't want to see that story before I've seen Tim Drake done right, before I've seen Nightwing done right, before I've seen Jason Todd done right. These are the Robin stories that I want to see. I don't want to skip straight to Damian Wayne because he's your favorite James Gunn. You're kind of ruining the rollout of the story. As somebody who loves these stories and wants to see other people get the great, the greatness of the storytelling in its proper order so that it matters. You know, this isn't right what you're doing to the audience. They deserve better than this. All right, we're getting towards the end of it now. Next up is a TV series called Booster Gold. Booster Gold is one of comics' really popular cult heroes. He's a fascinating guy. He's a loser from the future who uses future technology to come back to the present day and become a superhero so that people will love him. It is basically the superhero story of imposter syndrome on an HBO Max series. All right, this is my favorite announcement of the bunch so far. I love Booster Gold. I think this could be a very great, well, I guess it's not a film, it's going to be a TV series, but I think this could be a great television series. Booster Gold is a great character, and a good writer could do something great. There's a lot of established stories that are really great that people would like to see. So this is cool, but at the same time, Booster Gold, most people aren't me. They don't know who the hell Booster Gold is. Are people really going to tune in for Booster Gold? It's going to rely a lot upon how good of a series you actually make. You know, who you get to cast as Booster Gold and what the trailer looks like and stuff. You're not exactly making a television show out of a property that was on fire, just waiting to become a television show. But all right, these are your choices. Next up, getting towards the end, one of my favorite comic book series from last year was Tom King's run on Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. So we're going to turn that into a big science fiction epic film. Now, Superman's a guy who was sent to Earth and raised by loving parents, where Supergirl, in this story, she's a character that was raised on a chunk of Krypton. She has watched everybody around her perish in some terrible way, so she's a much more jaded character. Okay, Supergirl. Look, I can't judge this one because I didn't read this storyline, but I can tell you that amongst my friends in the comics world, people did not like it. I was sort of warned away from reading it. So people who read comics are probably going to be warning people away from checking out this movie unless somehow, through the magic of cinema, they're able to take a storyline from the comics that people did not like and turn it into something that people will like. And maybe I'm in the minority, or not me, but maybe some of my friends are in the minority. Maybe there's a lot of people out there who loved Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. But for me, word on the grapevine was Supergirl Woman of Tomorrow was not a great comic book. So this is a weird choice for me as well. That brings me to, quote, Swamp Thing. The last thing we're going to talk about is a very dark horror story, the origins of the monster who is Swamp Thing. And though it's totally outside of the rest of the DCU, it will still feed in to the rest of the stories. Okay, I love this announcement. Really, for me, for James Gunn, Swamp Thing should have been the first thing he announced. Swamp Thing. Literally, the great Swamp Thing stories are based on Alan Moore's work. They're excellent. I haven't read all of them. I've read the first two graphic novels. I'm in the middle of the third graphic novel, actually, as we speak. But I was just talking to my brother Shane, who loves the whole series, and he's been handing me the graphic novels as he finishes them. That's a great one. It matches James Gunn's sensibilities. It's perfect. It's a great place for him to start. And it's the beginning of him building a Justice League Dark, which is really a pathway forward for him that I thought would be really cool. You know, you establish some of the characters in the Justice League Dark, like, you know, John Constantine's getting a sequel to his movie with Keanu Reeves. I know that they haven't mentioned it here, but they just followed up that is still happening. You know, and you could introduce a character like Detective Chimp, you know, and some of these other cool characters, a movie about Zatanna, which is a really cool character from the DC Universe, nice, powerful lady, right? These are some ways that you could go about establishing a new corner of the DC Cinematic Universe that could be explored anew by somebody like James Gunn. So I would have loved to see that at the forefront of these announcements that James is making. Most of these things just have not done it for me. But let's look back at this whole slate here. We've got an animated series, Creature Commandos, Waller, I'm assuming that's a TV series, a Superman movie, a Lanterns TV show, the Authority film, Paradise Lost, a Wonder Woman-related TV show, Brave and the Bold, a Batman film to go alongside the Batman sequel, Booster Gold, a TV series, Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. So there's two Superman movies, two Batman movies, essentially. And then Swamp Thing, which I'm assuming is a film. I hope it's a film. That would be great if it was a film. Yeah, I don't know about this, man. To me, we're not establishing a DC universe of any kind, really. They're going and exploring different areas of the world that are open to them already, like Themyscira or Waller. They're introducing the Authority, which is a weird one to introduce into the middle of the world. You know, we got the Lanterns coming in, which is cool. That's probably the thing that I'm most excited for. Actually, I'm really excited about the Booster Gold TV series. I think that could be great, too. And Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing could be freaking awesome. But, man, I don't know about this. I mean, honestly, if you wanted to properly establish the concept of the Elseworld, what I think would have been the best approach that James Gunn and Peter Safran could have taken was to do a Crisis on Infinite Earths movie. Can you imagine that? If they took characters from the current Snyderverse, as well as characters from Tim Burton's Batman and from the Christopher Reeve Superman and the various scattered DC projects that they've made throughout the years, like even that Jonah Hex movie and Ryan Reynolds, Hal Jordan, just all of them, took them all and put them into a little blender and did some insane movie where people that we didn't like were killed and the universe was exploded into lots of different things, and we established a new baseline DC cinematic universe. And maybe we didn't even see exactly what that looked like, but we certainly spent all of our money destroying the previous cinematic universe and at least using the characters that were there as cannon fodder and doing something that was fun and give a true clean slate to James Gunn and Peter Safran. Now, that would have been awesome. Something like that would have been super cool. To me, the water was already muddy, and I just feel like it's even muddier now that I've read all these announcements. I don't really know what to think. I don't really know what to expect from it. And I'm kind of just biding my time to see what it all is like when it starts to come out. But look, I'm a fan like you guys. I hope that it's all great. I want it to all be great. I want every single one of these announced projects to be freaking amazing. I want to eat every word that I've said here today. And if it's not as amazing as we all hope it will be, well, there will be others. Anyway, This brings us to the end of another show, another fabulous episode of The Coolest Geek Alive. But before we go, I wanted to drop my Coolest Geek recommendation for the week. And today, figure it should relate to today's subject matter, I picked Alan Moore's Swamp Thing. I can only speak on the first three volumes myself because that's as far as I've gotten. But the first two are just magical. And my brother Shane has finished the whole thing and he loved it. There are six volumes totaling approximately 64 issues. And I highly recommend you seek them out. Hopefully, these will be the issues that James Gunn and company will be bringing to life in their new Swamp Thing film. Anyway, follow my band, DILFUSA, on Spotify. Follow me on Twitter, CoolestGeekJBS. And check out my Kickstarter for King of Kings live now. Thank you, and join me next time on The Coolest Geek Alive. Peace!
Let's sing it! It's gonna be freaking awesome! Come on! It's gonna be freaking awesome! You know the words! It's gonna be freaking awesome!
Listening to Coolest Geek Alive with me, your host, Jesse Blaze Snyder. Don't forget to rate, comment, and subscribe for more excellent geek culture content. Thanks for listening.